This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome to the Escape Hour. We are escaping from the heat today in Melbourne, 40 to 37 degrees currently. And I am here with Paul Howell, who's sitting in for Russ, and because Russ is away. Thank you for helping out and sitting in and having a chat with us today, Paul.
It's fantastic to be here on this glorious day. So, I feel like I'm having a little escape of my own.
Yeah, I know, when you come to the Escape Hour, you really do escape. That's why we do it every week, because we're escape artists.
Fantastic. It feels great to be here, so thank you for inviting me.
Well, thanks for filling in. And the interesting thing about filling in for us today is because Russ is in Iceland. What an extraordinary thing to consider when it's 40 degrees outside. And Paul, you're about to head off on a cold climate trip yourself, off to ski in Japan.
I am. So yeah, it feels very odd being here in the middle of a day like today with it being 42 degrees outside and thinking that in a couple of weeks' time I'm going to be in the Northern Hemisphere and it's going to be freezing. So yeah, I'm sure Russ is having a great time.
Well, as a matter of fact, I have actually just been looking at the good old book face, and I have just read, actually, 11 hours ago, Russ posted a few words on Iceland. He says, "I can't recommend this beautiful place enough. Pristine wilderness and glaciers, all for the taking. Plenty of local lovelies, lovely locals.
I'm sure they're lovely.
To rub noses with. 5 hours of daylight during winter, volcanoes, lava caves, glaciers, blue lagoons, northern lights, mountains, waterfalls, and so much, including funny language and amazing food." So Russ will be back next week and we will hear a lot more about Iceland. So that's very exciting.
It is, but listening to that list of things, though, it sounds exactly like where I'm going to be heading off in a couple of weeks as well. So all the things that Russ listed there, the language, the food, lagoons, I mean, there's going to be hot springs, exactly there is in Iceland. And the whole thing sounds very, very similar. And two very, very weird weird countries in terms of they're not the normal Western sort of setup.
Well, I guess the thing with, I mean, I can't speak for Iceland because I haven't been there. I mean, Japan, I have been three times and absolutely love it. The extraordinary thing about Japan is it's extremely Western in a lot of ways. You know, they have, aside from not being able to read the packaging, you know, they have 7-Elevens and, you know, all of the other sort of trappings. I haven't been up to Hokkaido where you will be going skiing. But, you know, Japan, even though it's not Western, it feels very Western. It's very clean and it's very, you know, it's just a fantastic destination. So I would highly recommend that. And we will be talking in a minute about some tips and thoughts on where Paul is planning in Japan to travel.
So everyone says it's like walking into a different world because it's just so very different from what we're used to, I guess, here in Australia or some of us are from the other parts of Europe. It's just like a very odd situation. So yeah, can't wait for it. I am terribly excited and I'm looking forward to learning lots from you about, what I should do when I get there.
Well, where to begin?
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
So let me talk to you. I'm off to Japan, and I know that you're a well-travelled lady and have been to many, many places. So I thought it'd be a great idea for me just to run you through what I'm intending to do and just to find out from you, what are the hot tips and the things that I should be looking out for and doing whilst I'm on my travels?
Absolutely. I'd be very happy to do that.
So we're going for 10 days.
Pretty short.
It is far too short, but sadly that's all the
end
of leave
we can get. Just think of it as a recce, because you'll have to go back.
We will definitely, because I'm sure there's too much to do there that we'll fit in. So the plan is to head over to Hakuba, and we're actually skiing in a place near Nagano, which is, I think, where they had the Winter Olympics a couple of years back.
Yes, I believe that's the case.
Then we're going to head over on a train to Kyoto. And sadly, we've only got 2 nights there, so I know...
That's criminal, really.
We'll be struggling to do everything we want to get onto. And then we're going to go to a little onsen, a town called...
Hakone.
Hakone, yeah, which sounds delightful.
I have not been to Hakone, but I know people who have.
So that sounds great. And then we'll finish it off in Tokyo, and there's a whole bunch of mad and wild and fun things that we're planning on trying to get some advice on.
Yeah, look, there's so much to cover in that particular little conversation. We're going to talk about onsen etiquette. Wow, that's a whole other ball game, which is just fun.
Was that a pun then?
And then some of the fantastic things that you can do in Kyoto and Tokyo, including theatre, performance, puppetry, whether or not you need to go to see the sumo wrestling, and more.
Fantastic.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
So, Japan.
Japan, where do we start? So I think that the first big place we're going to be heading to is Kyoto.
Right. Now, of course, you have got your Japanese rail passes, I believe.
Yeah, we have. I told you about this off air. So weirdly, we booked them on the internet. And not realising they were so easy to get access to here in Melbourne.
Yeah. So, listeners, of course, you know, Japan is a very hot destination right now. The thing to keep in mind is that a Japanese rail pass is fantastic. Only people that are non-Japanese can access these rail passes. You can go to a couple of places in Melbourne in the CBD. There's the Japanese Tourism Bureau. There's a number of them. There's one on Collins Street. And you can actually go in. You can talk to the people in there. They're all Japanese. They know the landscape. They can not so much help you book they will book for you the travel pass. They'll advise you what pass you need depending on where you're going and how many trips you're going to be taking. And then they can advise you on booking, even though they don't do the booking directly. Now, if you are looking at booking train travel, there is a fantastic website. It's called Hyperdia, Hyperdia.
Uh-huh.
Hyperdia.com. Will actually give you, if you put in the little local train station you're leaving at or the suburban train station you're at and you want to get to the other side of Japan, it will give you not on every single step of the way how far it is to walk on the platforms between the trains.
That's amazing.
It's incredible. And of course, the Japanese train system is, as we know, remarkable.
Second to none, yeah.
What I would also advise for anyone who hasn't been to Japan before is when you get to the train station, it's really, you have to change your total point of view on trains. Pretend you're not in Melbourne anymore, because you're not. When you get to the train station and you're a few minutes early, as you would be, if a train pulls in and it's not exactly at the time of your train, do not get on that train. Because in Australia, you just jump on that train and go, oh, well, I guess it's, you know, it's going to leave early or it's going to leave late, or you just wouldn't. The only get on the train that you need to get on, because otherwise the train 3 minutes earlier is not your train. They do have, of course, English signage now on the train platforms. And if you miss your train, generally speaking, don't worry, because there will be another one shortly after, particularly on the subway systems.
And are all the signs in the major cities there in English? So if you think you need to go to a certain destination, you'll be able to see, if I miss that one, the next one's going to be in 5, 10, 20 minutes.
Yep. They do have English manifests. So that and that hasn't always been the case. So I would highly recommend that when you're in Tokyo or in Kyoto and you're catching local trains, get a Suica card, so that it's spelled S-U-I-C-A. A Suica card is, you know, it's just like any kind of metro card, but they're fantastic and easy to get around. And the, of course, incredible bullet trains. They are so exciting to ride. the Japan Rail Pass, I think, doesn't allow you to get on some of the super, super, super duper fast 320-kilometre ones, but that's fine. They're all still fast.
Any bullet train would be great for the first timer.
It is.
Can't wait.
It's a great G-force feeling. So when you get to Kyoto and you've only got 2 days, I mean, obviously Kyoto is the place for temples. There are very, very many. Now, I've only been to Kyoto in the warmer months and some of the temples are extremely crowded. Mm-hmm. In the 2 days you're there, you could just spend 2 days doing temples. That's all you could fit in. One of my favourite temples is slightly north of the city. It's called Daitokuji.
Daitokuji.
And how was that? And it's got lots of little sub-temples within the temple. So that's a wonderful thing because you can actually see quite a lot of gorgeous little temples within a temple complex.
Sounds beautiful.
So that is beautiful. There are so many to see. A lot of them you can walk to. So, you know, Kyoto is a great walking city because everything's relatively close because it's so compact.
And lots of gardens there, I've heard, as well.
A lot of gardens. The gardens are stunning. I mean, if you love Japanese gardens. And then the other thing to keep in mind when you're in Kyoto is, say, instead of arigato, say okini.
Okini. What does that mean, Fiona?
That means thank you, but in the local parlance.
Wow. So you can actually sound like a local.
You can.
By saying okini rather than saying arigato.
Arigato. And you will find people will smile at you. It's like, I promise you, it will have an extraordinary effect.
Those hot tips are so difficult to get.
They are. So, of course, then you're moving on to Tokyo.
We are, yeah. We're going to do a little two-day stop at an onsen town. So onsen etiquette. Now, I was saying before, I'm used to going to saunas in Cologne in Germany. In fact, one of the biggest sauna complexes there has something like a dozen that are all themed. So in Australia, people are a little bit prudish. I'm guessing Japan has its own etiquette. So, yeah, what's that like?
Okay, so onsen etiquette is one of the funniest things. And I'm sure it's different in the men's onsen, but in the women's onsen, the old ladies, if you go to a local onsen, like a little neighbourhood one,
yep.
The old ladies will tell you what to do and they will tut-tut you and they will chase you down if you pick up the wrong bowl or the wrong this. So obviously it is fully naked. They're not shared facilities, so it's male and female facilities. There is quite a lot of conversation about whether or not you're allowed to have tattoos in onsens because in Japan only the criminal class and okay. Have tattoos. So
I'm sure we read one of those things as well. So where we're staying at Hakone, they've also had some signage up that say actually no tattoos in the onsen there.
It is quite I think they're beginning to be more lenient for Westerners because obviously there's I don't know why anyone would want to have a tattoo if it would prevent them from going to an onsen. But anyway, so onsens,
I'm sure there's many people who've got tattoos and then you suddenly want to go to Japan and suddenly think, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't done that right now.
I think they're loosening things up a little bit for Westerners because they realise that, you know, it doesn't mean that you're a criminal if you have a tattoo. But there are some of those, so I'm not quite sure if you've got any tats, how you're going to get around that.
I haven't. I always want to get one, but maybe I won't now.
Yeah, don't.
So I'd rather have the onsen experience.
The other thing with onsen etiquette is, of course, you have to wash yourself before you get into the onsen. Yeah. So they have the Japanese-style showers where you sit down on little stools. You pour the water over your head, either using the buckets or the shower heads, which are flexible, and you have to wash yourself first before you get into the onsen. There's usually four or five different types of onsens. There's and different temperatures. Some are, of course, boiling hot. Some have spas within them. Some have electrical pulses.
Oh, wow.
Yep, some are sort of slightly scented. And then you'll have, generally speaking, you'll have a little outdoor one or more outdoor, depending on the style of the onsen, if it's like a little local one. Then you'll have a sauna in there as well. So you sort of hop around.
Work your way through. How long do people actually stay in there for? Is it like a half a day, three quarters of a day?
I would imagine that for a lot of Japanese, it's practical. They go there to wash and to freshen up. I mean, that's what the onsens were originally.
Yeah. So before people had bathrooms.
They had bathrooms. I mean, most of the time when I go to an onsen, I'd probably spend an hour or two there.
Okay.
But you definitely don't have to spend that long.
I guess I'm just trying to relate the experience to if you went to a hot spring here in Australia, it would become an event. So you might go there for, half a day or...
I would
imagine, more if you're having treatments and things.
Yes. Well, of course, you can add on treatments because a lot of the onsens have day spas and things like that attached. You can sit outside the onsen or sit outside of the hot tubs and just sit around and enjoy the atmosphere. So you can extend it out. You have to remember, don't put your little towel. They give you a little towel upon entry. Don't put that in the water.
Okay.
That's not allowed.
Okay.
And you're not allowed to run and you're not allowed to jump and you're not and people will wag their fingers at you.
I'm so sure I'll be doing any of that. And also it's going to be freezing when I'm there. So we'll probably want to stay in the water.
Yeah, you'll want to stay in the water. It'll be fantastic. And then, you know, so there are posters in there that will tell you what you can and cannot do. So do read the posters because they're very orderly. And they don't like things to be done incorrectly.
I'm sure it's steeped in history, so yeah, they're going to make sure the rules are well maintained.
And of course, there's the slipper etiquette, but that's like another whole show.
That sounds great. So, moving on then, once we've finished in the onsen town, we're heading for only 3 nights in Tokyo. Wow. And there is so much I want to do in Tokyo. I'm just not sure how we're going to squeeze everything into three short days.
Well, you're not going to, that's the main thing. So, theatre, I think, is really fantastic. I went to a kabuki theatre performance. Absolutely loved it. We talked earlier about sumo.
Yeah.
I went to sumo in Osaka. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The trick to keep in mind with sumo is you will have to get your travel agent to organise your tickets for you because I don't believe you can just show up. But it's a really fun atmosphere. It actually starts at the beginning of the day and goes till 6 o'clock. And so my main tip would be go from 4 to 6 only.
Okay.
Because the bouts themselves only last for a matter of seconds. And if you go from 4 to 6, you'll see the very best. So they're heats, a series of heats.
And so you wait to the very end before you see the best of the best
and
actually start to perform.
And then you see the best of the best. Because, I mean, unless you're... It would be extremely boring to go for more than a couple of hours.
And you said to me off air as well that the bouts actually don't take very long either.
Very, very short. There's a lot of huffing and puffing and preparation and body slapping and sort of they have this sort of powder or flour that they throw in the air. So it's so...
Highly theatrical then.
Highly theatrical and really, really fun. Great people watching. And they don't have big screens, or certainly not in Osaka they did. So everyone's focused exactly on the performance below. And they parade each of the sumo wrestlers out and then... Right at the end, they have this wonderful parade with all these signs, a little bit of advertising, but not very much. It's just
fun. So exciting. And you say, so I should try and get tickets either before I leave Australia or try and get someone from our hotel to make contact and try and get us tickets.
I would. I mean, we ordered our tickets in advance and they mailed them to us in Australia.
Wow.
And I know that you're leaving in a couple of weeks. So you might want to ask your travel agent what he can wangle for you or maybe if he can ask the hotel if they can organise. I think you could order them and have them delivered to your hotel in Tokyo. So
that might be a great idea.
I think that's important to keep in mind.
Other little bits and pieces on our list of like wish list to do's. There's a Mario Kart experience whereby you get dressed up as the character Super Mario, and then you go in a go-kart and go racing around the city centre. Have you heard about that?
I haven't heard about that, but that sounds like an absolute gem.
So apparently they give you the costume, the hats, the masks, the little moustache. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll send some pictures. Apparently, it's full on because you actually go on proper roads with a little go-kart pretending to be Super Mario.
No kidding.
So that's going to be hilarious.
Yes, I must do.
Karaoke bars, what's your view there?
Well, I've been to a few wacky karaoke bars and most of the time you just sort of, because they have these little bars, they're called mama bars and they're run by little old ladies or older couples. And when I was there recently, was it in Tokyo? Oh, I can't quite remember now. We went into this mama bar where it was just an older woman and her husband, partner, and they didn't have a karaoke machine. He had a grand baby piano. And,
delightful.
We just stumbled across this place and sheet music, like reams and reams of sheet music, and we were able to get up and sing to a real live a piano accompaniment.
Such an experience.
And if we felt like we were a bit lost, the woman would come out from behind the bar and sing with us. So fun.
You must give me the details of that.
Yes, well,
if you can remember.
Like a lot of these little mama-san bars, you just stumble into them. So be adventurous, because they have these bars and cafes and restaurants that are not all at street level.
Yeah.
A lot of what happens in Japanese cities is 2, 3, 4 levels up. So you can see the sign and you just get in the elevator and you just press a button, get out of the elevator and just see whatever's there. And in some cases, of course, they say, oh, no, members only, which, you know, might be the case, or maybe they just don't feel like dealing with any gaijin.
Yeah.
But in other cases, you'll just step into this tiny, it's like a living room.
It sounds so good. I'm so excited. I love karaoke at the best of times. Doing it in Japan will just be taking it to a whole new level.
It is fun.
And then obviously eating in Japan is just a whole different experience.
Eating in Japan is like one of the best parts of being in Japan. There's different styles of restaurants. My favourite style, of course, is the izakaya format, which is tradition, which is like an Australian, it's like a pub. It's not like an Australian pub in any way, but they call it's like a pub. When you walk in, it's got an open kitchen. There's a lot of yakitori. There's a lot of fire. There's a lot of action going on. When you walk in, everyone greets you loudly, and you can often sit at the bench right in front of the where the food is served, and it's fun. Lots of grilled food, lots of sake, and beer, of course.
So that sounds amazing. So thank you for that. We need to move on, but it sounds like a delightful time.
Well, when you finish and you come back, you can tell us all about skiing in Japan, because that's one thing we haven't explored yet on the show.
I'd love to. So we'll take some pictures and we'll take lots of notes so we can come back and tell everyone about it.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.